Marx follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marx members and special guests share updates, experiences, and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marx.
Hello, and welcome to the second Talking Marx podcast. I'm James Nurton, the Marx editor, and I'm pleased to be hosting this podcast, which is looking at how counterfeiters and fraudsters are exploiting the COVID-19 pandemic, and also how brand owners should respond. I'm joined today by Tapio Blanc from Basel, Switzerland, who is Chief Trademark Officer at Roche and a member of the Marx Council and Marx Anti-Counterfeiting and Parallel Trade Team. Also by Sonia Santos, a partner of Grau y Angulo in Barcelona, who is also a member of the Anti-Counterfeiting and Parallel Trade Team. And finally, by Blanca Arteche-Abizu, who is Head of the Enforcement and SME Service in the Observatory at EUIPO in Alicante. So hello and welcome to all three of you.
Hello, James. Hello, Talking Marx listeners.
Hello, James.
Hello, James. Nice to be here.
It's very good to have you all with us. Thank you very much for joining us today. I'd like to start with you, Blanca. I mentioned that this podcast is looking at the issues around counterfeiting and fraud relating to the pandemic. What do you see from your perspective? How are counterfeiters and fraudsters trying to take advantage of the pandemic?
Well, James, in the Observatory, we already looked at the trading counterfeit and pharma products, and we just published a report before even the pandemic started in March 2020, where we already showed that there was a huge trading in pharmaceutical products, any kind of products, erectile dysfunctioning drugs, slimming products, doping products. But this, of course, has moved with this super high demand of certain products, protective gear and pharma products, and the decreased mobility. So really the change has been huge with this demand raise and a limited mobility. And the individual criminals and OCGs have been quick to exploit the crisis induced by the pandemic, adapting their activities and modi operandi. The most affected areas have been cybercrime, illicit supply of counterfeit and substandard goods, as well as any kind of frauds. But if we look at the kind of products, we have seen a lot around face masks at the very beginning, hand sanitizers, but afterwards it has followed very, very closely by test kits, which are very, very problematic and furthering pharmaceutical products advertised as allegedly treating or preventing the crisis. These are particularly worrying from a public health perspective, of course. The illicit sales of such products has increased a lot online and also offline via various online platforms and standard door-to-door sales methods. Now, lately, over the last weeks rather than months, this is all moving to vaccines, of course, with the new cases and the new companies starting to be able to distribute their products and the governments being able to vaccine the people. We have no known cases from what I know from our contacts with OLAF and Europol until now in Europe, but there are a few cases outside of the EU and already some darknets selling what they sell as being the vaccines. But as we know, for the moment, no vaccine has been distributed outside the governmental distribution channels.
And I guess it's very worrying for a lot of people that there's so much demand for these medicines and equipment and vaccines, and that criminals may kind of try to fill that gap.
Of course, the main problem is always the demands versus the offer. And also this has been seen through the curve. So at the very, very beginning, the huge demand on the face mask with not such an offer has been really huge. The moment there is more demand, this makes also the threat somewhat smaller, even if there is still a lot of problems there.
Thank you. And turning to you, Sonia, what are the different types of threats that brand owners face from these problems that Blanca has described?
Well, international health and enforcement authorities, such as the World Health Organization, Interborrow Eurobond. And that's criminals could try to sell unregulated and even counterfeit COVID treatment and vaccines, especially now that governments have started vaccinating citizens. The same international authorities are emphasizing that citizens should not be concerned as long as the vaccine they receive come from their government health authorities, which have been procured in the regulated and controlled supply chain. The problem is that, as Blanca said, until more vaccines are authorized and they can be manufactured in sufficient quantities, there are risks of shortage in numerous countries, something that may encourage people to seek the vaccines elsewhere, which forces all kinds of illegal activities. Clone websites and online scams aim not only at consumers, but even at health procurement authorities, have been a constant since the beginning of the pandemic, taking advantage of the personal preventive equipment supply shortage, the pressure on health systems to acquire sufficient supply for their country needs. And with the announcements of the first vaccines, there have been already cases, as Blanca said, of advertisement on dark web marketplaces offering COVID vaccines using the brands of genuine pharmaceutical companies that are already in the final stage of testing. Those fraudulent pages offer COVID treatments and vaccines at high prices, and they disappear rapidly without the products ever being delivered to the buyers. And even more, in many cases, the pages contain cyber threats, especially phishing and spamming malware. Those fraudulent pages could seriously damage brand image, undermining consumer trust, who may not be even aware that the pages are fake. Also, it has been reported an increase on cyber attacks to the authorities and companies involved in the vaccines, which are believed to be aimed to find weak points to try to steal vaccines and resell them on the black markets. I mean, those willing to adventure themselves in buying vaccines on the black markets should be aware that as soon as vaccines left the control supply chain, they represent a high risk. Vaccines which have fallen out of the cold chains may not be effective or secure anymore. And moreover, they could be mixed with counterfeit vaccines and even medical waste, such as antiviral refill. Criminals do not care about people's health or safety. Their only goal is to take advantage and profit from people's needs. And as Blanca said, since the beginning of the pandemic, the distribution of substandard and counterfeit pharmaceutical products had remained a consistent increase in criminal activity. We have seen it with the PPE, such as masks. We have seen it with pharmaceutical products that falsely claim to cure or prevent COVID. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that we will probably see it again with the vaccines.
So there's some, yes, quite a variety of threats and obviously very worrying given the health implications. So turning to you, Tapio, obviously, as we discussed, you're a trademark, well, you bring a trademark owner's point of view. What do you think needs to be done to address these threats?
Well, there is not one uniform correct answer to that question. Every brand owner needs to create his own brand protection ecosystem in the real world and in the virtual world. What I recommend to brand owners is, one, to have a brand protection software tool where you can monitor internet, darknet, business-to-business marketplaces such as IndiaMart, web pages with rogue pharmacies, and social media. Two, do mousetrap buys to get proof and business intelligence from all these platforms. Three, I recommend to do a customs registration, as you can do that as trademark owner, to get counterfeits on one hand side, but also illicit parallel trade. Four, counterfeit is interdisciplinary, which means you need an in-house team with all different kind of people, such as people from group security, trademark lawyers, people from manufacturing, logistics, or supply chain. And also, of course, the support from senior management that you have enough resources to do so. A membership, of course, helps in associations, for example, in Pharmaceutical Security Institute, PSI, or Marks, and things like coordinated actions, like the famous Pangea actions. That's really, really useful. A cooperation with police and crown prosecutors and customs, trademark authorities, and the regulatory bodies like FDA or the EMA. Then I would say, after all this, it's important to do the right selection. You cannot act against all these threats that you have. You have to make a selection. So the process of selecting the right cases takes also a lot of energy. And in the pharmaceutical field, we have the Falsified Medicines Directive in the EU. We have added two mandatory safety features on the products. One is the anti-tampering device, and two is the serialization. So if you take all these things together, you have to think it's about the patient safety and the reputation of your company, and not only about the trademark infringement.
That's a very useful checklist. Thank you, Tapio, and I'm sure that will be relevant for a lot of businesses. Just one quick question for you. Does the pandemic change the way you approach these problems? I mean, obviously, these problems all existed before the pandemic in a quite a serious way. Has anything changed, or is it just a question of scale?
One part of the answer is no. Why? Because we have implemented all these things, arte legis, as the trademark group, as you have to. But two, yes, we took our diagnostic tests and our pharmaceutical, which apply to this pandemic disease, COVID-19, and we had an extra look, a specified look, a closer look, a more intense look to all these challenges there.
Okay, thank you. So moving on then, going to come back to Blanca. What practical steps do you think brand owners can and should take at this stage in terms of what they can do to face up to these challenges?
Well, James, what we have been doing until now from the observatory is try to help rights holders getting in contact with the enforcers who were already doing some operations. So, you know, both OLAF and Europol here in Europe have been following up on all these trends. You know, Europol has published a number of intelligence reports helping enforcers understand what's going on and showing the elements. And also OLAF has done quite a number of operations and important ones. In particular, I remember one on the face masks, for example. And it was very, very helpful that we put in contact the right holders that we helped to our limited capacity, putting them in contact to get the right intelligence to them. So for me, it is important that the right holders reach out to the enforcers, either in their own countries, but also through our EU partners. Of course, you know, we have this tool, the IP Enforcement Portal, which is a secure tool and is available in any of the European languages. And it is also an opportunity for the rights holders to reach out to the enforcers in the countries they need to in a secure way. But also the fact that the information never is out of the tool, you only receive an email, helps sharing the information and the intelligence in a completely secure way. And I think this is a good thing that you could do. And accessing the IP enforcement portal is something that we don't, that it doesn't cost. We offer it because we are a public service. And you can find it, just Google IP enforcement portal. I think you will have probably the first hit would be that one. So that was also something that we can offer to the rights holders to get in contact with enforcers, either police or customs, depending on your problem. And the other element that we have been collaborating to, and I think was very important for right holders, is doing some info sessions. So in the past, last year, we collaborated with some certificate companies to show enforcers how to recognize original from fake certificates. And this is also very important because the certificates to the products, if there is a false certificate, let's face it, you will have probably a fake product, a counterfeit one or an illicit one at the least. So this was also very useful. Now, over the last weeks, we've been in contact with the companies who are closing their process to offer the vaccines, and we have been also doing some awareness sessions with enforcers. And I think this is also something very important, that the enforcers understand, again, get some information on the logistics, on the kind of elements that are important in order to recognize the originals from the fake.
So it's very good. It sounds like there's a lot of information out there, and we'll certainly share the link to the portal on the Marks website. Just one quick question. You talked about cooperation, and I just wondered, you know, how much cooperation is there internationally on this topic? And do you think there's scope for greater cooperation between different parts of the world, given that this is a global problem?
Well, I guess this is something that also Interpol is looking at. We have also been in discussion with WCO, and I think they're also following. So I'm sure everybody is following up internationally, not only at EU level. We have started EU-wise because it's easier from the security point of view. But I think any right holder should try and contact their governmental authorities, either in their area or in the areas where they see the problems. I said, for the moment, we haven't seen on the vaccines problems necessarily in Europe, but I think it will come for sure. So I think the exchange of intelligence is super critical, so that everybody knows where this stands. It's also important, I guess, to have a collaboration with the e-commerce authorities, because they also should be helping in order to, at least for the moment where there is only a governmental distribution, to stop any traffic on anything that is called vaccine. Because clearly, for the moment, nothing should be distributed online.
Well, thank you very much for that overview of what the enforcement authorities can do. And Sonia, turning to you, perhaps you could give us your sort of direct experience of working with enforcement authorities and what you think works well, and in particular, what could be improved.
In my experience, enforcement authorities have always been quite active in the fight against counterfeits. But in the recent years, I have noticed an improvement with the spread of groups specializing in the fight against IP crime, both offline and online. Some of these specialized groups have competence at national level, and therefore are the best suited to carry out simultaneous raids in different locations or to conduct more complex investigations and operations that may involve collaboration with other authorities, customer authorities, tax agencies, or international bodies. But there are also specialized groups at local level that can act more quickly if immediate actions are needed, some factories or warehouse that were already located, to seize the counterfeit goods before they are distributed. These groups are also the most suitable for random periodic actions on hotspot counterfeit local areas. Building a trusting relationship with these specialized IP groups is obviously a must, since they are the most appropriate ones to turn to when an IP holder intends to carry out a specific action. However, it is advisable also to support ex officio actions, and whenever possible, IP holders should be prepared to provide at the request of any enforcement authority information, support, and resources, from manpower to logistical, such as transport or storage. This is undeniable a burden that right holders should not have to bear. However, unfortunately, the efforts of the enforcement authorities have not been until now accompanied by the necessary social awareness and the consequent resources and legal framework necessary to fight more effectively against IP crime. It seems that so far, the general thinking has been that IP crime only affects the profits of the IP right holders, and therefore it should not be a priority for enforcement authorities. Proof of this is that the IP crime was no longer included in the EU policy cycle for organized and serious international crime for the period 2018-2021. Unfortunately, the COVID pandemic has shown that the damage that counterfeiters can do has been underestimated. They have factoring facilities, the logistics, and the routes, and they have not hesitated for a single moment to use them to flood the market with counterfeit COVID-related products. As Blanca said, health authorities worldwide are now urging governments and enforcement authorities to implement measures that anti-right holders had been seeking for years. Stronger and consistent regulatory and legal frameworks for preventing, deterring, and punishing counterfeiters, cooperation and collaboration among national authorities involved in IP-related crime, and a greater capacity and resources for the enforcement authorities to enforce anti-counterfeiter laws and to overcome the challenge in the investigation and prosecution of IP crime. We can only hope that the unfortunate global health emergency in which we find ourselves will make it possible to achieve these goals, and once the pandemic is over, any progress made will not be lost again along the way.
So you think there's quite a bit of work to do then to raise the profile of this problem and make sure that people understand how serious it is?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely necessary.
So taking that up then, Tapio, what do you think brand owners, Marks members and others can do to help address that, to raise the profile and help tackle the problem?
Yes, James, let me highlight a couple of things. Certainly, as we've heard, I think an awareness campaign on all channels is a must. Then in the life cycle of all this, all stakeholders must be involved and play their part. Brand owners, police, crime prosecutors, trademark owners, FDA, EMA, customs, web page and social media owners, patients, and every individual itself. I mean, how safe is it to order from a rogue pharmacy pharmaceuticals? Every individual must think about that as well. And what we need is a change of mindset and culture. Counterfeiting is not a gentleman's crime. It has serious consequences to so many that are involved. Patients that may die, children works, and the loss of reputation of the company and the trust in the brand owner. I would also suggest to focus on countries such as China, India, Mexico, Turkey, just to mention a few.
Thank you, Tapio. So we're coming towards the end of the podcast. I'm just going to ask each of our speakers for one final tip that they think people should take away from this podcast. So, Blanca, first of all, your one tip for our listeners.
Well, James, I was hearing about the problem that IP crime is not considered a priority. You know, at EU level, the priorities for the next policy cycle will be decided this quarter. So if there is, for me, one thing to ask is if you think this is that important, that you try to make this clear within your country, to your enforcement authorities, to your governments, because it is the right moment, at least in Europe, for this to become a priority. And we are all from our side trying our best to make people understand that IP crime is, as you were saying before, not a gentleman's crime, but linked to a lot of problems and to organized crime. So it's the moment to make this clear.
So people need to speak up. Sonia, what practical tip would you offer?
I would say the same. I mean, I think everything that has been said is very useful. But if I had to stress out one thing, it could be that joining efforts with enforcement authorities to raise social awareness and fight against IP crime is now more vital than ever. It is important to make available to consumers and authorities as much information as possible, not only so that they can be sure that the products they buy are legal and safe, but also so that they can be aware of the risk related to illegal products. Not only the obvious health risk, but also fraud, scams, data theft. I totally agree with Tapio. I mean, drop their blindfolds and realize that counterfeiters are real criminals and not only some kind of second-rate offenders that can only harm luxury brands.
Thank you, Sonia. And Tapio, you get the final word, I think.
Great. So I say, listen to this edition of Talking Marks, go back to your desk and implement and process everything you have heard today. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much indeed to Tapio, to Blanca, and to Sonia. It's been very interesting to talk about this challenge that we're all facing at the moment. And obviously, hopefully, this has been a relevant and practical and useful podcast. And thank you very much indeed to everyone for listening. Talking Marks will be back next month with another discussion on a topical issue. So look out for more information about that soon. But for today, thank you all very much for joining us.
Thank you, James. It has been a pleasure.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, James. Thanks for inviting us today.
Join us again soon for another podcast on an important issue for brand owners. To find out more on our website and guest speakers, visit marks.org/podcast.